Hey everyone, welcome to Just Mental Health with Stefan M., the podcast where we discuss mental health from a social justice lens. I'm Emily.
And I'm Stephanie. A quick disclaimer before we get started, we are mental health professionals, but this is not to be taken as professional advice.
We are also aware that our privilege may cloud our perspective on some topics, and we not only welcome, but encourage you to message us with criticism and correction. Let's get started. All right, our small business shout out this week is a filmmaker. His name is Spencer Brown. Spencer Brown is a Canadian filmmaker and storyteller working across short form narrative, commercial, and editorial projects. His creative work explores styles of experimental and social realism with whimsical takes on often deep-rooted, open-ended societal questions, usually elevated by striking editing. Spencer is an adept director and editor who has experienced pre- and post-production at documentary and feature film production houses. He has worked on projects that have been premiered at TIFF and Doc NYC and been developed for BBC, ITV, Showtime, and Arte. I don't know if I'm saying all these correctly. Most recently, contributing assistant editorial work on Oscar-winning filmmaker Kevin MacDonald's ITV film 2020, The Story of Us.
Oh, wow.
So that is really cool. And he is actually looking for someone or for people to be in a documentary he's currently working on. He sent me a little blurb of what he's looking for. Do you have a pendant from a past relationship, a song someone you don't speak to anymore showed you, a letter from a former flame, a hoodie from an ex, a valuable life lesson from someone not in your life anymore? Do the objects we collect define us? Is our leftover stuff the key to who we really are? This film is about the things, material and not, we leave with and pick up in relationships with people not in our lives anymore, and then ultimately what we do with those things. So if you have a story about something or a lesson that you got from someone in your life that's no longer in your life anymore, and you would be interested in being a part of his documentary, you can reach out to Spencer. His email is brownspencer14@gmail.com. That's Brown with an E at the end, BrownSpencer14 @gmail.com. And his Instagram is THPENCER is his Instagram. So that is really cool. Definitely reach out if you're interested in his films or you're interested in being a part of his documentary. And now let's get started on our topic. Today is memes part two.
Yay. This was the one, well, it was our first episode was memes, and it's still the episode that has done the best out of all of them. So
who doesn't love memes?
Right? So we're going to do it again. We've got some memes today. We're going to talk about them. And I think the cool thing about episodes like this is we get to talk about a lot of different subjects, and they're usually a little more lighthearted, which some of our episodes can be kind of heavy. Mm-hmm. So it's nice to have some fun ones thrown in there in case that's what you're in the mood for. You're not in the mood for a very heavy topic.
Exactly. And we are going to post our memes that we mention on our Instagram. So yes, if you are listening and you want to see what we're talking about, go ahead and check that out on our Instagram, which we'll say all of that at the end.
Yes. And it's also linked in the description. So, so the first one, we'll just describe them as we go. But then of course you'll get to see them on the Instagram. The first one is just blank text, blank with just text on it. And it says, how many narcissists does it take to change a light bulb? Mm-hmm. None. They all use gaslighting. Mm. Ha, ha, ha. So gaslighting, we've talked about that once on another episode that we had. I don't even remember which one it was again. But do you want to go over what gaslighting is, Emily? Because I think you're the one that talked about it on the other episode too, just so people get the joke if they don't.
Yeah. So gaslighting is when you, it's when you manipulate somebody into thinking they are the one that is wrong, or the one that is not necessarily wrong, but like manipulating someone into thinking that, questioning their own judgment. So common examples of this is like, what are you talking about? You're crazy. Or that's not what happened. You're remembering it wrong. Or why are you so sensitive? Why do you always, why are you so paranoid? This is just your anxiety. This is a lot of times people do this when they want to use someone's mental illness against them. Will be like, no, this is just your anxiety. Like what you're saying is irrational. You're being irrational. Making someone feel like they're crazy, for lack of a better word. So yeah, this happens really with anyone, but it's most often talked about in romantic relationships. So a common example would be someone's cheating, and the partner, let's say partner X is cheating on partner Y, and partner Y says, you're cheating on me. And partner X says, no, I'm not. You're crazy. You're just being paranoid. You're just being too sensitive. And then eventually partner Y starts to think, okay, maybe they're right. Maybe I am being too sensitive. Maybe I am just being paranoid. Maybe I'm the problem. Maybe I need to work on not being so paranoid. Mm-hmm. So it's just a manipulation tactic to make a person question their own sanity or question their own judgments.
Mm-hmm. And so, you know, as going along with the meme and the joke, narcissists, they're meaning, you know, people with narcissistic personality disorder using gaslighting as a manipulation tactic, which so that's one of many that not just people with narcissistic personality disorder use, but anyone that, you know, is trying to manipulate or abuse you. And even people use it when they don't even realize that's what they're doing. Sometimes you can use it by accident. Like you're trying to maybe deflect or downplay, or you don't want to admit to something that you actually did. And so you use gaslighting, and you don't mean to use it in that way to, you know, make someone feel crazy. It's just sort of like a defense mechanism. But, you know, being aware of it, you can stop using it yourself. You can identify when other people are using it. And so you can just better, you know, just communicate better. So, you know, with gaslighting, some people might say, or, you know, might ask the question, what's the difference between, you know, someone gaslighting and someone just trying to give another person like some feedback, or maybe they disagree with that person's point of view and they're trying to tell them, no, that's not what happened. I don't think that's what happened, but they're not actually gaslighting them.
Yeah, that's a good question. I think if it's done in a like in a way that's not like you're talking down to them, or you're talking to them as if they're crazy. Like if someone says, "I think you're cheating on me," and the partner, let's say, actually isn't cheating, and the partner that's accusing the other of cheating genuinely has some attachment issues from a previous relationship where they were cheated on, that does make them more susceptible to believing that they're being cheated on. And the partner wants to like point that out and help them work through it. If they were to say like, hey, I know you've been cheated on in the past, and I think that may be coming up for you right now. You know, that is different than saying you're just being paranoid because you've been cheated on in the past and now you're all hurt and you think that everyone is cheating on you all the time. And like, you know, and in this example, the person actually isn't cheating. Anytime that someone, like if they were cheating and they try to convince you that you're not because of any sort of flaw that they choose to find, that would be gaslighting.
Mm-hmm. So it's more like if you know, like if the person comes to you and says, this is what's happening, this is what you did, or this is how you made me feel, and you know that that's true and you know that that's what happened or that was your intention, and then you try to make the other person believe that it wasn't, that would be gaslighting. But if it's really not, then, you know, you're just sort of saying like, no, you know, then you're just telling them, no, I think you misinterpreted. That was not my intention. But
yeah.
So it's really like if you know that that's actually what happened or not, and you're trying to make them believe that it wasn't true.
If you know that that's what actually happened or not. I mean, it depends on the context. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think in this example with cheating, if you are cheating and in any way, shape, or form trying to make them feel like something about them is the reason they are having
suspicions.
Yeah, or that would be gaslighting. If it's not true and then you're approaching it in a demeaning or manipulative sort of way, that would also be gaslighting. Other examples. So this the term gaslighting came from a movie/play from the 40s. I think it's just called Gaslight or something.
I don't even know.
Yeah, but it was about husband and wife, and the wife, the husband would adjust the gaslights. And the wife would say, the lights seem dimmer. And then the husband would be like, what are you talking about? They're not dimmer. You're just going crazy. And he kept doing that.
That's so messed up.
He kept doing that until she eventually believed that she was crazy. And then it made her just question her judgment on everything. So then he could manipulate her. So then if she wanted to say, you're yelling at me, he would be able to say, I'm not yelling at you. You're just doing that whole crazy thing that you always do.
Yeah.
And she's been manipulated to believe that that's true. So that's how it's done. It's like they get into your head and like make you think that something's wrong with you so that they can manipulate.
Yeah. And something that is true is not true. And like making it up. And that's sort of it's a mind fuck. I mean, that's what it is. And it's a horrible thing to do to someone, especially if you know what you're doing and you're trying to do it.
Yeah.
It's totally not cool.
Women are often gaslit.
I don't know, I guess.
You know, because of the stereotypes, like women are often told that we're dramatic or we're just emotional.
Are you on your period?
We're
hopeful. That's another one that
that is like, yes, like when you're like, oh, you're just on your period, you're hormonal.
She's just
maybe
PMSing.
I am hormonal, but that doesn't mean what I'm saying is invalid.
Yeah.
So I think people use the stereotypes of women to gaslight them a lot. So
that we explained it so much that maybe the joke isn't even funny anymore. But that's what the joke is, and that's what gaslighting is. And so now you know. Okay, so the next one that we have is the meme of Gene Wilder as Willy Wonka, and he's like got his, he's like resting his head on his hand, you know, and he's got this smirk, and the text says, "Me listening to someone trying to quote unquote educate me on a mental health topic like I didn't get a master's slash PhD in this."
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, that happens a lot. I'm sure a lot of people in different professions feel that way when someone is trying to explain their job to them.
Uh-huh.
And we have a term for that when it happens from men to women. It's called mansplaining.
Uh-huh.
And it's like, please don't tell me what my job is when you don't work in the field or you have not studied it or you're not telling me about your personal experience, because that's the difference. You're telling about your personal experience. Nobody can say, you know, well, that's mansplaining or that's wrong or that's right, because nobody knows your experience better than you. But if you're just talking in general and you're trying to tell someone something and they're saying, well, no, not really. It's more complicated than that, blah, 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 or, you know, and you're like, no, I know what I'm talking about.
Mm-hmm.
You may not know what you're talking about. Like, mm-hmm. consider that you could be wrong. Like, I would not go to, like, for nursing friends, like, I would never explain to them how a wound gets infected, even though I know how it works because I have a basic understanding of biology and health and stuff. I would not explain to them, this is how it works. And so what you're doing is not right, or you shouldn't treat it this way. Like, I think they would know because they are nurses. They do this like
they would know
all the time. And they practice it. They went to school for it, you know? So in the case of mental health professionals, like if they're practicing, they had to get licensed, which we did a whole episode on that that you can check out that explains that. But that's a real long, grueling process, having just been through that myself.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not like we took Psych 101 and now we're out here diagnosing everybody.
Right. Like, I think this happens a lot in our field because we have a profession that's like so nebulous. Like, it can often be like,
good word.
It can also be like things can look like something you have experienced. Like, if somebody has major depressive disorder, DSM diagnosable major depressive disorder, and then someone else is like, oh, I've been feeling sad and tired and just down a lot lately, that person might think they can relate to the person with diagnosable depression, and then they can try to explain, oh, this is all you need to do to be happy. And it's like, no, that's not how it works, because what you had was you went through a rough patch and you were sad, and not to
which is normal,
minimize that, but that is not the same as a chronic depressive disorder.
Yeah.
But people like, they don't see it as like, these are disorders, and these are things that, like,
these are illnesses.
Yes, yes.
I mean, it's, you know, and whatever you believe about how these illnesses come about, because that's a whole debate, but they're still illnesses because they're typically chronic in nature, or, you know, just reoccurring in a lot of ways, and they need to be treated. They don't just usually go away on their own. And there's a lot of different factors that contribute to them. So it is hard when someone, you know, thinks they know, but they don't. Or maybe they have an experience, but it's not generalized to everyone. So you can't put blanket statements out there with mental illness. And one thing that I used to hear a lot from family members when I was going through school, when I got my bachelor's in psychology, I would hear a lot, psychology is a soft science.
Oh.
Did you ever hear that?
I never heard that.
Oh, man.
I mean, I've heard people put down psychology or not, or act like it's not a real science, but I've never heard that.
It's a soft science. I'm like, what? First of all, maybe if you're talking about Freudian psychology or Jungian, yeah, very soft science, because all medical science back then was really soft in a way. There wasn't a lot of ability to sort of test these theories that they were having, and they were only really looking at, like, it was very homogenous what they were looking at, like straight upper class white people. So, but now you can't say that, because there are so many different fields of science that play into psychology, like, you know, neuroscience, and then biology, because we realize that the brain and the body are all connected. They work together. And then anthropology, sociology, the social sciences, all of that stuff plays into it. This is my soapbox for the episode, maybe. Psychology is not a soft science. It's a complicated one, because there's a lot of different pieces to it. So,
yeah, and because it's seen as a soft science, people think they can explain it. Like, anyone thinks that they can explain it to you. Well, there's a reason you have to seek higher education to be able to be in this field. You know, it's because it's not easy. It's complicated. It's not a soft science.
Or, like, especially with therapy, a lot of people will say, like, well, I can just talk to my friends. I can, you know, or I could listen to people talk all day and give them advice. And I'm like, that's not what we do, though. We don't give advice. That's there's a method. There are treatments, there are interventions that are changing, and we're finding, you know, which interventions are better and are evidence-based, and which, you know, are more effective in what they work for. And it's not just listening to someone talk and giving them advice, because that's not how you treat. That's not how you treat illnesses. So that kind of goes back to just not viewing mental illness as disease, not viewing it as an actual illness, but as just like someone just needs to talk and they'll feel better. That works. I mean, that works in the short term, but does it treat the chronic condition or the underlining trauma? No. So,
yeah. I also, with this meme, I also feel like this happens a lot with social issues or with trauma. Like, we know a lot about social issues because we are social workers, and we have to know these things in order to treat people of, you know, varying backgrounds. And so sometimes people think that there are things that you can have an opinion on, and and they'll like engage in a debate with me. And I'm like, no, I'm not giving you my opinion right now. I'm telling you facts right now. And they think that, like, people thinking they can have an opinion on psychology or social issues. With trauma, like looking at trigger warning, like with sexual assault, and like people will be like, well, I think that if that something like that happens to you, you should report it, and this is why you should report it, and blah blah blah. Okay, well, do you understand the trauma reaction that the brain goes through? Like, are you, like, because I do. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I understand that because I have a master's degree in this and I've worked with trauma survivors for many years. So mm-hmm. I'm telling you that this is why survivors often don't report. This mm-hmm. isn't up for debate. This is the this is it. This is the reason. I'm yeah. educating you, and people want to try to tell me.
Right. Just arguing for like a debate. Yeah. You're saying, no, this I'm giving you an answer to the question that you posed.
Yeah.
Yep. So. That happens a lot on Facebook.
Yeah.
And I've seen it a lot. And but you know, I think that that's part of it. And I'm sure there's lots of professions that feel that way, especially right now, imagine being a doctor or a scientist in, you know, who studies viruses and infection right now. And you must feel like this, like, well, the whole year and a half, you've been like, oh my gosh, I'm trying to explain to you how this works. Just cover your mouth, wear a mask, you know, don't go outside if you're sick, don't be around people. And people are like, I don't think they actually work. I think masks actually make you sick. Like, that's not how it works. This is not how it works. Anyways, so I could only imagine the level of just frustration they must have right now.
Yeah.
All right. We're going to move on. So the next one is a picture of the cartoon, The Grinch, How the Grinch Stole Christmas, the original one. And it's the one where the Grinch is like standing there and he looks, you know, he's like being a grump. And they're showing his heart, which is like really, really small. And the text says, the Grinch's heart was two sizes too small. A reminder that we must rule out medical problems before implementing behavior plans and interventions.
I love that. That's so funny.
I that's very like, it feels
that's
very
so
nerdy.
Interesting. I like never.
Right?
I mean, because he was clearly depressed.
Yeah.
The Grinch was clearly depressed. Yeah. Oh my God. That's hilarious. He was clearly depressed. He was like, didn't like people. Mm-hmm. He would just sit at home alone, was just mm-hmm. always mad. He never was happy. And then it turns out he had a heart condition the whole time. And if he had gone to a therapist and the therapist had tried to treat him from a mental health perspective, right. It wouldn't have worked because he had a medical problem. That's so funny. That fits so well.
Yeah. And that's why it's important to, you know, oftentimes with clients that I'm seeing for the first time, especially, or like their new clients, I'll ask them, when was the last time you had like a checkup, or when was the last time you went to the doctor? And sometimes they're like, oh, I go to the clinic when I'm sick. And I'm like, okay, but like, do you have a doctor that you see on a regular basis? Mm-hmm. No. Okay. So we need to get you one, because I don't want to diagnose you until the doctor at least looks at you and says like, things are, you know, your levels are normal. Like there's nothing major
because
going on.
Can affect like thyroid issues, yes. Affect your
low vitamin D,
mm-hmm, your energy,
depression.
Yeah.
Lots of things. If you're not sleeping well, which, you know, sleep is one of those things like which comes first, sleep or mental illness, it's really connected. But if you're not sleeping well because you have a sleep disorder, and then you're having depression, irritability, maybe you're having a lot of symptoms and you're like, oh my gosh, do I have ADHD? Am I going crazy? You know, cause I'm hearing things that aren't there. Like, no, you're probably, you're sleep deprived. We need to make sure we need to rule that out first. Cause when that gets treated and you start to get some sleep and those symptoms go away, then okay, good. You don't have it. You just needed sleep. There's lots of things like that, because it is all connected. So you have to take that into consideration. Sometimes you'll treat somebody for something and then you realize later that, oh, they actually had like a brain injury. Mm-hmm. And so your interventions weren't going to do anything because the biology, the makeup of their brain is different now. Mm-hmm. So CBT is not going to work, you know.
Right. Yeah, like we said before, mental health is physical health and physical health is mental health. Like it's impossible to have a physical health issue and not have it affect your mental health. Like there's just no way. And sometimes you can treat the physical health issue and still have the mental mm-hmm. health issue. And in that case, you would want to seek therapy. But if you go to therapy first and it turns out it's a physical health issue, the therapist is only going to be able to do so much.
And they might be able to like be a support while you're mm-hmm. getting treatment. You know, it doesn't hurt to do them both at the same time, but the cause of what is happening to you could be different, and therapy may not actually be doing what it's supposed to do if there's a medical issue. Yeah.
Right.
So yeah, that's an important one. The next one is just like a screenshot of someone's Twitter. Yusuf Roach, that's the name. But the text says, people are always like, you're so brave for being so open about your mental illness. And I always want to be like, oh, that's actually just the mental illness. I think that's funny. You didn't think that was funny.
Wait, I don't get it. That's actually just the mental illness. Being open about it is the mental illness.
Yeah. Like, the part of his mental illness is not talking about his mental illness, I guess. I don't know.
Sorry, I didn't mean to know.
If you didn't get it, then maybe other people didn't get it either. So that's fine. Okay.
Is it saying like impulse control or like difficulty with social interactions, like difficulty knowing that?
I think it's vague on purpose. Like you can kind of.
Well, not like what this guy specifically means, but like, is that what is possibly getting at?
Oh, you mean like yeah, so it made me think of like personality disorders, like someone maybe that has a personality disorder might just be like way more forthcoming about details of their mental illness or something, and then you know people are like, wow, this person, they really like are an advocate for themselves. They really talk about it a lot, which is a good thing. And then they're like, no, it's actually just the personality disorder. I don't know. That's how I took it.
Like the personality disorder makes you
talk about yourself a lot. I don't know. Or okay. The things going on with you.
Interesting. Okay.
I don't know. You know, I'm thinking like histrionic personality disorder, but I think maybe I'm reading too much into that.
I think like ADHD, where people have trouble like with people with ADHD might have trouble like thinking before they speak, and so then they may share a lot of personal details that they maybe didn't necessarily want to share, but it just like comes out, and then they're like, oh my god, I actually wasn't comfortable.
That's a good interpretation. Or like anxiety. Mm-hmm. If you have social anxiety, you might overshare mm-hmm. as a way to compensate for it.
I get it now. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I just thought, you know, I don't know. I guess sometimes I felt like that, where, and maybe that's more of like a cognitive thing of just like, you share something and then you're thinking, you're like, oh my God, why did I do that? I'm so weird. Why would I say that? Like, that's so embarrassing. And really the other person is like, yeah, me too. Cool. You know, they're not thinking about it the way you're thinking about it.
Or they see it as brave.
Yeah. Right. Right.
Yeah.
Oh gosh. The next one. I love this. So it's another Twitter screenshot from at Matt the Brand, and the text says, I don't know what college freshman needs to hear this, but you don't want to be a psych major, you just need therapy. Ouch. Like, ouch. That was me.
Uh-huh.
You know, if I had gotten therapy when I went to college, I wouldn't be here now. So, you know.
Really? You think so?
I think the world won on that one. No, I'm just kidding. Well, I think that's like a lot of what was going on was, you know, you go into your like psych 101 class and then especially your abnormal psych class. And the whole time you're like, oh my gosh, this is what's going on. You're diagnosing everyone in your family. You're diagnosing yourself. You're, you know, you do that. You go through that phase of diagnosing everyone and everything because you don't understand how diagnosing works. And then there's like this, I'm going to go into therapy because I'm going to help other people. But you're also hoping that like you find some understanding about what's going on. And then you go to therapy and you're like, that's okay. That makes sense now. Well, I'm already too far into this. So no, but no, I mean, I think a lot of people that go into the mental health field, you know, they have either mental health issues or trauma or both. And that's part of why they go, because they understand they want to help other people in similar situations. So I don't know. I just think it's funny because remembering college you're like, yeah.
It's a lot because, I mean, if you have mental health struggles, you're going to find psychology to be interesting.
Right.
Because you can connect with it.
Because you want to know. You want answers.
I've never thought about that before, that that might be why. Like, I know that many therapists have their own mental health issues, which motivates them to go into the field to help others. But I've never thought about that before, that, like, if some people – who end up studying psychology or something similar. I didn't study psychology. If they were to seek therapy, if they then wouldn't want, that's interesting. I've never thought about that before. I wonder if
maybe they would realize that they actually wanted to do something else, but maybe they would still want to do therapy, or go into psychology. They would just be maybe farther along because they'd be a little bit more adjusted and well-balanced. Pro tip for anyone who is thinking about going into therapy, get into therapy yourself because it's really helpful. Mm-hmm. You should, if you're going to do therapy, if you're going to go through school for that, whatever degree or license you end up getting, get into therapy yourself because you want to work on your own shit before you work on other people's shit. And that's just,
it's so important.
The best advice I was given was somebody like, said, you need to start going to therapy.
Like counter transference. For those of you who don't know what that is, counter transference. When you recognize yourself in your client or you relate to your client, and then it can, like if your client is talking about something that you also deal with and then you're having a reaction because of your own stuff, it, you know, that's something that's hard to manage. And we're trained in how to manage that. But if you're not,
But it still happens.
And if you haven't gone to therapy yourself, then it's more likely going to happen and you're not going to be as good at managing it. It also helps, like, I use a lot of the interventions and techniques that my therapist used with me. Like, sometimes I'll be with my client and I'll, like, picture myself in my old therapist's office. And I'm like, what would she say? You learn a lot from them. But also, it's really important that you at least have an awareness of your own stuff. Before you're treating other people.
And also in that situation, you're remembering what it was like to be the client. So there's even more empathy there of not only am I being empathetic about what this person's going through, but I'm being empathetic about them being a client in a therapy session right now. And like, how could I approach this, you know, to make it more comfortable for them? How would I feel in this situation, or what worked for me, what didn't?
Yeah. Like if you've never been a client, it is going to be harder to relate to your client or be able to put yourself in your client's shoes. So
yeah,
for sure.
Oh, show. Okay. Next one. Actually, there's two more and then we'll be wrapping up. The next one is, I don't know what this thing is. It's like I don't know. Is it a monkey? Is it a cat? I can't tell. I don't know
what it is either.
I can't even describe this, but yeah, I guess you'll see on the Instagram. But it's this little cat monkey thing, like sitting on this brown stool, and it's got its hands out, like sort of that gesture of like, what the fuck, you know?
It has this like grumpy face.
Yeah. And the text says, it's like a client and the therapist talking. The client says, I'm miserable. I really want to get better. The therapist, did you complete your homework? Client, no, I couldn't find time. And then it's like this monkey thing, I guess supposed to be the therapist going like, what the fuck? Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh, that gets me.
It gets me too. I don't know. I tend to not have that reaction when my clients don't do their homework. I think because I have trouble, you know, like my therapist is wanting me to like rate my discomfort with what I'm working on every week. And we're meeting every other week. So she wants me to check in, via email everybody. And I forget. And it's not that I don't want to get better. Mm-hmm. I just forget to do it.
It is hard. But, I mean, it is hard to remember, like, when you've got so many other things going on too, you're like, oh, I got to do this thing for therapy.
Yeah, because it's often like, they're like, they have so much, like there's just stressed or there's, you know, and then like I'm giving them this thing to do. And then they're always like worried that I'm going to be mad that they
can't
do it. And I don't want them to feel like
can't scared of fail. Me.
Yeah.
It's not pass fail.
That being said, like this, I think this meme definitely points out a really good point that therapy takes work. Like therapy is not, I was just talking about this last night with my friend Brianna, if you're listening. But we were talking about how therapy is one of the few services where the client actually does the work. Like if you hire a plumber, you just, you know, sit on your couch and your plumber like does their job. And
they take care of it.
Whereas if you have a therapist, the therapist does their job, but you're the one that's doing the work. The only other thing that I could think of is like a teacher or a tutor or something. Like the student is doing the work, but like.
Or like a personal trainer.
Yeah. Okay. I guess it's more common than
I think that's a good analogy because when you think about like a physical therapist, you know, if you get injured and you go to physical therapy, or if you go to a personal trainer because you want a certain result, whatever that is, when you're exercising, they expect you to do the work with them and when they're not there. And then when you go to therapy, it's the same thing. You've got to do the work. You've got to practice the skills and everything outside of the session. Otherwise, it's not going to do much. 1 hour a week, if that, you know, if you're getting that, is not going to do much. Like the part of it that gets me is when, you know, we've validated, we've built rapport, we've been working together for a long time. And they're coming with very like specific things and we talk through it. And it's like, you know, what if you try this? What if you did something different? What would that be like? Oh, that might work. I don't know. Okay. Can we try it? Can we do an experiment? And then they don't. And then, okay, next week, well, let's try it again. Let's see, why didn't this work? You know, and you're like problem solving and trying to help them with a very specific thing. And they're saying that they want help with that, but then they're not even attempting. Mm-hmm. Homework, I'm not talking about like just giving them a worksheet and being like, fill this out and bring it back, because it's a little different. But it's more like, did you practice using I messages this week when you talked with your spouse? Mm-hmm. Well, no. Okay, well, why not? Because when you came to therapy, you said you wanted to work on your communication with your spouse. So why are you not trying these things?
Yeah. Those get me a little bit more. Mm-hmm. I guess with homework, I was thinking like a thought record or like,
yeah, I mean, those are a little more like Monday.
Yeah, but little things like that, that like if you're speaking to your spouse anyway, just speaking to them differently.
Right.
That is a little
you
bit.
You have to talk to them anyway.
Yeah. But then I try to be understanding because I'm like, things just, especially if you have kids, or like, you know, like things just like, it's not about the amount of time. It's the amount of like space in your brain to like have the mental capacity to do the things.
For sure. For sure. But, you know, people come to therapy.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because what they're doing is not working. So yeah. It's like you could keep doing what you're doing and getting the same results, and or you could try something different.
Yeah, yeah. The bottom line is yes. You have to, if you are like forgetful or you just have so much going on that you forget to homework or just keep the whatever you discussed in your last session, keep it in mind through the week, you're not going to make progress. Like the therapist can be understanding, but you're also not going to make progress.
Well, yeah. And if you have like a serious, like, I mean, you really have forgetfulness or something's going on where you can't always remember, like you need to bring that to your therapist's attention. So maybe you guys can problem solve that, because that would get in the way. And that's not really your fault. You know, like if there's something else going on, like if you have ADHD and it's hard for you to remember these things and follow through with these things, well, that needs to be addressed and maybe needs to be modified.
Yeah.
Or something else. But you need to like be honest about it. Like, yeah, I didn't do it because I forget everything. That's my problem. Okay, let's work on that then.
Yeah.
What can we do to make that easier for you? If you're just not doing it because you're not doing it, come on. Like, come on. Come on, man. But okay. The last one. Oh, this is my favorite one. So it's like another Twitter thing, but it's a meme. And so the text says, this book reminds me of you, the book. And then it's a picture of the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders, 5th edition. So if you know, you know, like.
So she's basically saying you have a mental disorder.
You have problems.
Yeah.
she's diagnosing you with something.
The way she's saying it. This book reminds me of you.
The DSM. Down. It's thick. So the DSM, I think you had talked about this in another episode too, but the DSM, the 5th edition, is the one we're currently on. And it's put out by the American Psychiatric Association, I think, or something.
Say that sentence again. Your head was turned.
Oh, sorry. It's put out by the American Psychiatric Association, I think. I was trying to look at the one I have over there, but I couldn't read it that far away. And it's the book about like all the different diagnoses that we have, the official ones. There's a lot of stuff that's not in there that probably should be in there. That's another, you know, that's another story. But like there's I don't know what it's called that's similar for like medical doctors. They have one like that. But,
oh, never mind. I was about to say
it. It's like I don't remember what it's called. I mean, it's like there. I can't grasp
is
the.
Is it the eye?
Oh, something like that. But if you know what that is, then you know what that is, or you could Google it. But it's similar because it's you have this
ICD, book. International Classification of
could
Disease.
Could be that one probably.
Yeah.
But you know, you use it, you flip through it and has them, it has different mental health issues.
The criteria that you need. In
yes. And it has them organized under different categories like personality disorders or mood disorders or substance use disorders. And so that way you can just kind of flip and you can go through the criteria, see if your client meets the criteria that they has a bunch of other information in there of like, you got to rule out this first, rule out this first. You know, diagnosing someone is actually like a complicated process. It's not so much of just like, oh, these are your symptoms. Okay, this is your diagnosis. It's the same way medical doctors, like they've got to rule out some things. They've got to take a lot of other things into consideration. They should before they give you a diagnosis. Sometimes a cold is just a cold. And so that's easy to diagnose. But sometimes a cold is something much worse.
And the symptoms can present similarly. Like,
yes.
Like just use myself as an example. So I have OCD. And I just received my diagnosis like 6 months ago, even though it's something I've struggled with for 16 years, because I thought that it was just generalized anxiety, because that like anxiety is a piece of OCD. You know, you get anxious and then you obsess over what's making you anxious, and then the compulsion is to relieve the anxiety. So it's like, it wasn't just like I went to a therapist or I went to a psychiatrist and they're like, okay, here are symptoms, bam, OCD. It's like, okay, well, you're presenting with anxiety, therefore I'm diagnosing you with generalized anxiety. And it can just present so differently, and different things can cause like, attention issues can mm-hmm. also be a result of anxiety or depression, or
yes.
if you're depressed, you're not going to be able to pay attention very well. And so people mm-hmm. might think they have ADHD. Or if you have ADHD and you have trouble with executive functioning, that can make you depressed.
Mm-hmm.
And so then your people, sometimes when they get treated for ADHD, their depression actually improves, because what's making them depressed is that is all of the issues that come with ADHD.
Yeah.
So the DSM is, it's like very clear, like it's written very mm-hmm. cut and dry. Like these are the symptoms.
Right.
This is how often the symptoms have to have occurred in order to be diagnosed.
And if you don't meet criteria, you don't meet criteria.
Right. But it's actually like way more complicated than that.
Yeah. Right. And though we joke that the DSM is like the Bible of mental health, I really want to do an episode about the DSM because there's so many problems with it too that we don't always take into consideration. I think they've gotten better. I mean, especially the DSM-5. I was like a junior or a senior in undergrad when the DSM-5 was coming out. They were like in the process of discussing it and what, you know, the committee that works on it. I don't even know who's part of that committee. I should probably look that up. But there's a committee that discusses this, and based on research and from what people in the field say, they decide what goes in it and what doesn't. And so there were a lot of things that I remember us talking about in my classes of like, should this be, you know, like thought questions, like, should this be in the DSM? What should be in, what shouldn't? And so they changed a lot in the DSM-5 from the DSM-4. Like there's a few diagnoses that we don't use anymore. There's a few where the names have changed. Just for your information, for example, autism spectrum disorder is now the term used for the whole thing. So there's no longer, they no longer diagnose anyone with Asperger's, which was in the DSM-4. Now it's just autism spectrum disorder. And then there's different, like modifiers and specifications, but that term was taken away.
Yeah.
There's a few
I
others.
I think with ADHD as well, there's no ADD anymore.
Yeah, that's right.
ADHD inattentive type.
Inattentive.
Mm-hmm. If you have
or hyperactive something. Yeah.
Yeah, like if you have all of the symptoms of ADHD, but you're not hyperactive, then, mm-hmm.
then it's what used to be ADD.
Yeah.
There's a lot of weird stuff like that. Like RAD, reactive attachment disorder. They changed that. It's something else, which I can't remember right now off the top of my head. And like a lot of specifiers, like there's no longer, this is just important if you're, you know, billing for insurance. There's no longer like post-traumatic stress disorder, chronic, that they took that out. I don't know why. Now it's unspecified, which is just like,
yeah,
seems like it makes less sense because it's less specific, but that's what they're doing.
We're wondering like why it changes, like do mental disorders just like change? The answer is no, they don't just change. But with more research, mm-hmm. and like more research and more observation, and you know, we learn from
all the different sciences that psychology pulls from.
Yeah,
we learn a lot more, and so we try to get more specific.
That, like, mm-hmm. Yeah, that that what you know that the terminology is not as accurate as we once thought, and so then another version comes out.
And some terminology is just like was outright offensive, you know, and they're trying to get away from a lot of that terminology. That could be another.
I mean, it's also too, like but- it used to be, like very homophobic. Like they had,
A while ago, I don't remember which version it was, but there was one where homosexuality was in it, diagnosable mental disorder. And they took that out, thankfully, but that used to be a thing. So, you know, it's as we've evolved, I think, as a society and also just within the science itself and the understanding, some of that's changing. There's still problems in the DSM, but at least it's changing. That's what science should do. When you know better, when you know more, you should change.
And relating to this meme specifically where it's, I'm assuming they're talking about like a couple where she's like,
yeah, that's kind of how I took it.
I think that, this kind of reminds me of when people are like, oh my God, are you analyzing me? And I'm like, okay, first of all, where did that even come from? In the entire like grad school and 5 years as a therapist, I've never once like used the word analyze. Like that's not what we do. I don't know where that came from. But also like we don't go around like diagnosing our friends or diagnosing
No, because it's exhausting.
Right. So sometimes I might have a thought like I think that like this friend of mine maybe has something.
Yeah, there's something going on.
But I don't like think about it in depth, you know? And so That's why she handed the whole book, the whole DSM. She didn't open it up and say, like, I've been analyzing you, and this is what you have because you have meet all these criteria. You know, she basically is just saying, like, it seems like you might have a mental health issue, and I'm right. not going to, you know, delve into it because it's not my job. Here's the book.
It's kind of like a snarky way of being like, go to therapy.
Yeah.
Read this and go to therapy.
Yeah.
So, but that is all the memes that I had for this one. So, of course, we'll do another one way down.
Yeah, this might have to be like a recurring because this was a popular one.
And I would love it if you guys listening sent us memes. You can send it to the Instagram, just like DM us, just, you know, slide in those DMs and give us some good memes about mental health. And if they're really good, they'll probably make the episode because it's not like we don't have a lot of action going on in our DMs right now. So. And then we can talk about them. So that would be really fun to see what memes you guys find and come up with and like.
Yeah. All right. So that's our show. If you enjoyed this episode, please share with friends and family.
And don't forget to follow the show's Instagram for updates on new episodes at Just Mental Health Podcast. That is with a period between each word. We record a new episode every week. This is Steph.
And M signing off.